Wheels Across the Prairie. The story of the conveyances and roads which crossed the American prairies and Wisconsin's part in this transportation history. This program, Canal Failures. Host for this series is Dan Schutz, director of the Safety Division of the Wisconsin Motor Vehicle Department. Assisting him is Thurman Fox of the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. Here is Mr. Schutz.
We've seen how Wisconsin waterways were used by the fur trader and the lumbering industry in early Wisconsin. And now, Thurman, let's look in our scrapbook and see what we can find out about canals and canal boats. The fur trader actually opened Wisconsin in the West, and the Happy Voyager and singing made use of the water to some extent. And we know that a single raft of lumber going down the Mississippi measured 4 million board feet. And we talked about 4,000 feet in one crib, so you can imagine how many cribs of lumber this meant. But now the route of the fur trader and the route that was used so much by the lumbering industry was to be the route of modern commerce, because settlers were coming to Wisconsin and people were coming here to make their homes and live. And steamships would be traveling on these waters. But if we were to have a true commerce, a modern commerce, we would have to have these bodies of water connected so that there would be an overall plan. And before it was realized that canals were not efficient, that they were expensive, and that railroads could do a better job and highways could do a better job, millions of dollars were to be spent and years of planning and effort were to go down the drain, money was to be lost. But there were many people who believed that there would be an overall plan of waterway transportation from the Great Lakes through the Mississippi, the Missouri River and its tributaries, so that one could go from Buffalo, New York to the Western Plains by means of rivers and canals. Back in 1795, Laurent Barthe contracted with the Winnebago Indians so that he might transport furs from the Wisconsin River to the Portage River, across the Portage there to the Fox River, and move with his goods. Now, this always meant, of course, that you had to take maybe up to 5 ton of load out of a canoe, carry the canoe, and then carry the load, and then reload the whole load. Well, this wasn't a very practical method of transportation. In the early lead mining days, the lead was many times moved from that area down the Wisconsin River to the Mississippi, across the Gulf, and up along the Atlantic coast to the eastern seaboard to get to where it was used at New York. In other operations, the lead was shipped up the Wisconsin into the Fox River and Green Bay and via that route. In addition to this, of course, the logging industry and the U.S. Army helped build the use of boat traffic, as we've seen in this slide here, in which we show a picture of a huge load of logs and a boom of logs in use on the river. In 1821, the soldiers at Fort Howard were ordered to build boats to transport 300 men from Fort Howard, Green Bay, to the Mississippi River. Of course, river traffic was also used in taking supplies to the Indians, and postal service was set up on the waterways. In addition to this, harbors were being improved and built in this same area. And yet, with all this going on, Henry Clay, speaking in the United States Senate in about 1840 and talking about Lake Superior, said it was beyond the furthest bounds of civilization, if not in the moon. This is not strange in view of the fact that in the early 1800s, it at one time was considered that Wisconsin would be permanent Indian territory. But even while Henry Clay was saying this in the United States Senate, there was transportation going on. Immigrants were coming to Wisconsin in the 1830s, and in 1838, the first lighthouse was built in the Milwaukee Harbor. Here we see a sketch on a canal boat on the Erie Canal. The Erie Canal did more to bring immigrants into Wisconsin and the impetus of the movement westward than any other canal. The Erie Canal was 362 miles long. It was finished in 1825. It was made with hand labor and with horse-drawn crude machinery. And we have a picture here showing a stump puller drawn by horses. Nothing like a bulldozer in a smooth path, but real difficult labor. And yet, Irish immigrants using spades built the Erie Canal, locks and all, in about 8 years. The canal raised 500 feet from the Hudson River to Lake Erie. There were 72 locks, and a lock was 12 feet wide, 90 feet long, and had a lift of about 7 feet. The canal actually handled real small boats, as you can see, with only being 12 foot wide, and a shallow draft boat with a 7 foot lift. There was always traffic tied up waiting to go through the locks because there were so many locks. 50 to 60 boats would be waiting their turn. In spite of this, it was a huge success. Thousands of tons of freight moved both ways on the Erie Canal, and immigrants were coming to Wisconsin. And here's what a Norwegian immigrant says about his trip on the Erie Canal. Thurman, do you want to give this with a Norwegian accent?
I wish I could, Dan. This was written to the Norwegian, to his Norwegian friends back home. It was written in 1844. He's cautioning them, and he says, "You must be sure to draw up a specific contract with a skipper who offers to take you through the Erie Canal. Many will present themselves, but you must be careful. On our trip through the canal, on the canal boat, we had such fine weather that we could walk on the banks of the canal alongside the boat. We gathered much fruit, especially apples, and brought it on board the boat in big sacks. You must be careful not to eat too much of this fruit, for it caused severe illness among us." Of course, I suppose one of the exciting parts for the immigrant was when he went through a lock. Now, locks were much the same, whether you were in New York or Ohio or in Indiana. Now, here we have a picture of a lock of about 1830. The downstream line boat has dropped only a little below the level of the upper reach of the canal, whose water is being held back by the upper gates. The drawing that we show you now is one leaf of a lock gate with no water in the lock so as to expose the sluice gate, the wooden floor of the lock, and the miter sill against which the gate closes. The gate is shown partly open in this particular picture. Now, before the boat gets to the lock, the a horn is used by the boatman, and he blows the horn to notify the lock keeper that he is coming. Now, this particular horn was used in about 1830s in the Genesee Valley between Mount Morris and Rochester, New York. And the boatman would give a good blast on this horn to notify the gateman that he was coming. Now, of course, the first through traffic that there was between New York and Chicago was as a result of the completion of the Erie Canal in about 1834. After the Erie Canal was completed, other canals were built in the interior of the United States. In Ohio was the Ohio Canal that connected Portsmouth to Cleveland. There was the Miami Canal that connected Toledo with Cincinnati. And in Indiana, we had the Wabash and Erie Canal. And so the canals moved westward from New York to Ohio to Indiana and finally into Wisconsin. And Dan has some information for us about canal building in the state.
Well, just last week I saw the remnants of an old canal up near Montreal, Quebec. But with all this canal operation going on in the east, and they were prospering and expanding, this was certainly to inspire the building of canals in the west. There were two proposals at that time. One was the Fox, Wisconsin Canal, which would have a portage to meet for the Fox and the Wisconsin to meet. And the other proposal was to have a canal that went from the Milwaukee Harbor up the Menominee River and then across through Oconomowoc and Jefferson in that area and finally reach the Rock River. In 1837, an English officer, Frederick Murriatt, who had toured Wisconsin, wrote about the river, and he said, "At Green Bay, the Fox River flows into the bay, but the navigation is checked a few miles above town by the rapids. Yet there is no doubt the river will be made navigable up to its meeting with the Wisconsin, which falls into the Mississippi. There is only a portage of a mile and a half between the two, which through which a canal will be cut, and then there will be another junction between the lakes and the far west." Of course, the canal there at Portage would be the least of it. The original plan was to improve the 156 miles from De Pere to Portage, or from Green Bay to Portage, of the Fox River. But that would even be less trying than the Wisconsin part of it, where the Wisconsin was full of snags and boils and changing current and shifting channels and sandbars, and there was no dredging at all. So the original idea was to put in dams and locks on the lower Fox, where you had a raise of 170 feet from Green Bay to Lake Winnebago. Less than half of this whole project was ever completed, and here we see a slide of the lower Fox above Wrightstown, where a drawing is made with reference to the rapids there and the need for dredging and locks. From Lake Winnebago, the Fox is a flat, shallow stream, and there was much need for dredging. There would have to be a lot of money spent. So there were land grants in 1868, 1846, and 1848, and then this land would be sold and the money used to improve the canal. Morgan L. Martin was very interested in transportation, and he became the president of the Fox Wisconsin Improvement Company in 1853 and headed up this organization. Well, they went ahead and they did some dredging on the upper Fox with the help of a War Department survey in 1839, I believe it was, by a Captain Cram. And work went ahead so that in 1855, a boat was able to come through the locks and the various canals from Green Bay and arrive at Appleton. In 1856, the steamer Aquila left Pittsburgh and went down the Ohio, came up the Mississippi and the Wisconsin, across at Portage into the Fox River and out into Green Bay. This must have been a real terrific trip. And Thurman, you have a diorama with reference to this, I believe.
Yes, I do, Dan. This, the diorama that we have, was made by Joel Salter, who formerly was on the staff of the Historical Society. The diorama itself was used in the History Mobile, the Society's traveling museum. Now, in this diorama, we attempt to show a canal boat being pulled along the shoreline. A path has been worn where the animal has pulled the boat. On board the boat, we can see the wash of the canal owner, the merchant goods that are on the deck of the ship. Back of him, a little bit to the stern, we can see a landing where the boat has probably stopped and deposited some of the materials. And then for the poor person who did not have the wherewithal to make the passage, he could walk along the line, and there we see a man walking right there. Now, of course, the land sales did not progress too well. While in the diorama we show some rich farms, in reality the sale was very slow. For the land company, or for the canal company, really. And the company attempted to gain capital from Eastern capitalists and were not successful. And eventually, the canal went into receivership in 1866. In 1872, the government purchased the improvements that had been made on the canal, and the Eastern interest then were able to take over the unsold land. But even though the canal, the Fox Improvement Company, went out of business, canal improvement continued for another 25 years. And over $2 million were spent in on the Fox and Wisconsin River trying to make them navigable. But about the only thing they succeeded in doing really was attracting settlers to the area. Because at the time they were trying to build the canal, railroads were coming in and were proving to be more efficient, really, than were the canal systems. Samuel Brooks and Thomas Stevenson were employed by the canal company as painters to paint the locks and to promote the company. And the locks that they painted, like this one here, is at Kaukauna, and it shows the rapids on the one side and the calm waters on the other. All of this was intended, of course, as a promotion stunt, trying to interest people in the area to buy the land. Now, between the mouth of the Wisconsin River and Portage, and between, well, on up the Fox River to De Pere, and then from the mouth of the Wolf to New London, many locks and dams were built in order to make this area navigable. The distance from De Pere to the mouth of the Wolf is about 59 miles. And this included the trip across Lake Winnebago and across Butamore. And there were many locks built along the way. And here we see the rapids at Kimberley, and then the lock system at Little Chute. First the single lock, and then the double locks right in the area. Today, there is no commercial navigation on this water system. The locks officially closed in 1951. The boats that were used on this water system are very similar to this one that we have displayed here. This is a model of a boat called Milwaukee. Notice the unusual spelling of Milwaukee. It does not end with a double E, but rather with an IE. Now, this is an early type steamer. Fuel was supplied from wood along the way, and in the early days of lake transportation, the passengers on the boat would have to get out with the crew and cut logs in the forest and cut it up into firewood, stovewood lengths, to feed the boilers of the steamships. Later, as the companies became more organized, they were able to have logs already cut along the banks of the lakes and the rivers, and the steamer would only have periodic stops and load up and then would proceed on its way. Here we have a horn that was used on the river between Portage and Oshkosh, and also used on the Lake Winnebago. It still works, and it was being used in about 1875. The Historical Society has collected a number of tickets. Now, you could buy a ticket for a cabin, as this particular person had done here, or you could buy a ticket for deck space. Now, if you were fortunate enough to have a cabin space, you could get inside the boat and out of the weather if it were inclement. But if you bought a deck ticket, then you stood on the deck regardless of what the weather was. In addition, or I should mention here that the top one is from the steamer War Eagle, which was really a famous steamer on the Mississippi River. The Historical Society, in addition to collecting the tickets like these, we also have bills of lading telling the merchandise that steamers like this one would carry. Dan, when steamboats first came out, there was really no safety regulations. People were concerned about safety then, just as you're concerned about highway safety now. And this particular one, this is a pilot's certificate, and it was it's made out to Mr. Gabbert, G-A-B-B-E-R-T, and let me read part of it to you. This was made out in accordance with the Act of Congress approved August 30th in 1852. You see, by this date, the federal government has become interested in safety. And it goes on to say that the undersigned supervisor, inspector of the 8th Supervising District, certifies that William Gabbert, having been by him this day duly examined and touching his qualifications as a pilot of a steamboat, is suitable and a safe person to be entrusted with the power duties and so on and so on. And it's signed by the supervisor on June 29th, 1860. Now, lake boats, like this one, were not very fast. It took them a long time. In fact, it would take them maybe 2 days to make a round trip from Fond du Lac to Oshkosh. And eventually, the lead and lumber and wheat were being transported by the railroads, and the only thing left for the steamers were passengers and excursions. The railroads really took over the business, and the canals were in difficulty. At least the Fox River Improvement Company and what it tried to do was in difficulty. Dan, what can you tell us about some of the other canals here in Wisconsin?
Well, except for the Sturgeon Bay Canal, there never was another successful venture at all. The one more major canal venture was the Wisconsin or the Milwaukee Rock River Canal Company, which was formed by Byron Kilburn, and he became the president of this corporation. But by that time, many people were favoring the railroads, many people were favoring the Fox Wisconsin Canal, many people hated Kilburn. The legislature was only lukewarm to his idea, or actually hostile, and Governor Doty, who was interested in transportation but saw no good in this plan, finally took away all of Kilburn's authority, and the company was disbanded. People who invested stock in it lost heavily, and of course, actually there never was any building done in the canal. It was all a paper idea, and stock was sold, and it never got to that point. But during all these years of stress and strain to dig canals, the settlers kept coming, and they came by one way or another. Here we see a picture of a Mackinaw boat on which the fur traders, later than the canoe, after the canoe, transported furs by piling up a mound of them in the center of the boat. There were four rowers who sat on benches, and they were guided by an individual who was atop a tower, and he had a steering oar. And they took directions from him. And from the Mackinaw boat, we got the idea of the Ark. And the Ark was a boat that carried its load above water, yet was actually not a complete boat. It had a kind of a pontoon effect, I believe. Thurman, will you tell us about the Ark? I believe you have something here in material on that.
Well, the interesting thing about the Ark was, of course, because it provided the immigrant with an adequate means of transportation. He could transport his goods, his animals, and at the same time it was cheap, which was probably most important. The Ark really was the ancestor of a long line of flatboats. It was built in various sizes, varying anywhere from 25 to 60 feet long and about 25 feet wide. Now the Arks were purchased by the foot, by the settlers, and they were usually sold for about $10 a foot. The house on the Ark was made of 4-inch planks and covered the whole hull. Its walls were flush with the sides and ends, and the roof had a very slight pitch and was 4 inches thick, so it served as a deck. A fireplace with mud or stone chimney supplied cooking and heating. As much comfort was built in as possible because this might be the home for weeks or even years while a new home was being built. The naturalist Audubon said the roof of an ark looked like a farmyard. It's a family wash, the playpen for children, a plow, wagon tools, haystack, wagon wheels lashed to the sides, and the skiff on the roof or floating behind it. 3 men were needed to manage the ark. The ark was hard to steer. It turned around and twisted and went sideways in the rivers. At the end of the journey, the ark was broken up and the wood was used for new homes. So there are really no arks in existence today. A cargo flatboat also got the produce to market. They were so flat and heavy that they really needed the floodwaters to keep them moving. But this type of transportation was cheap, and so cheap, in fact, that flatboats were used for cargo during most of the 19th century. When the flatboatman came to the end of his journey, he often returned home in a keelboat. Now, the keelboat was a descendant of the Durham boat, and it could go upstream or down. It could carry up to 25 tons of cargo as well as passengers. But I think that Dan can probably tell you more about the keel boat than I can.
Well, it's amazing to me the hardships that these people were willing to go through to settle here in Wisconsin. Our ancestors, they must have loved this country dearly to go through some of the hardships that you can imagine they would on such a boat as the Ark. Talking about a keel boat, Nathan Myrick at Prairie du Chien, an enterprising young fellow of 18, wanted to trade with the Indians, and the government loaned him a keelboat, and he talks about his keelboat. This was the nicest keelboat I ever saw, partly decked over, standards alongside, 6 feet high, sharp at both ends, had running boards on each side of the whole length to walk back and forth for the purpose of poling the boat. I cut a hole through the roof, put a mast in, and made a square sail of bed ticking. I put in a sheet iron stove to cook on and prepared to enclose the whole boat with lumber and live in it through the winter in case we were frozen in on the way up river. Well, to get a keelboat up river, there were several ways that one could operate. You could bushwhack it, and that is, they walked along the deck and grabbed a hold of bushes and twigs and branches and limbs and tugged the keelboat up river. This seems to be a real primitive method. Or they tied a rope onto the bow end and tried to walk along shore, and this would almost take a path because you'd have so many overhanging limbs. The last way they'd try would be to pole it. They would have a pole 12 to 14 foot long that was shod on one end with iron, and then they would set this pole near the bow of the boat and point it in that direction, and then walk the boat underneath them. And as they would walk the boat, they would reach finally the after house, and then he would go to the forward end, and this would start all over again, a kind of an endless procession, a good deal like a treadmill. And this was the way in which the keelboat was used by the settlers. But on arks and flatboats and keelboats and canal boats, the settlers started for the West. And many of those settlers who came via the Erie Canal and Buffalo and across the Great Lakes on steamships, many never got here. They were wrecked in storms, and safety was an important factor to these people. They never got to see Wisconsin at all. But when they did finally arrive at some port in Wisconsin, many of them had to walk to the place that they wanted to live. For the system of canals never came to fruition, except for today you can see the locks on the O'Hara River, where small craft are transported from Lake Mendota to Lake Monona, and at Burnt's Rollways Reservoir on the chain of lakes in Eagle River, there you can see boats hoisted from one body of water to another. But actually, the plank roads and the railroads quickly swallowed up the very small mileage of Wisconsin canal and river transportation, and so it never did amount to anything. In fact, it actually so much energy was put in canals that it stopped the growth of highways. But Great Lakes shipping, of course, has always continued to be important, and as it is today. But steamers and packet ships persisted in years for operating on Lake Winnebago and on the Mississippi River. And next week we'll find out what happened to the clipper ships and the steamships in their use of the waters here in Wisconsin.
This has been Wheels Across the Prairie, the story of the conveyances and roads which cross the American prairies and Wisconsin's part in this transportation history. Next week, Sail and Stream. Host for this series is Dan Schutz, director of the Safety Division of the Wisconsin Motor Vehicle Department. He is assisted by Thurman Fox of the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. This series is produced by the State Historical Society of Wisconsin and WHA-TV. Written by Doris Platt and directed by Bob Liu in the studios of University of Wisconsin Television.